it's really fun to see, because like the kids they goof off sometimes in class, and
me too.
Yeah, so everybody does, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you wonder sometimes if like what you're saying or what you're teaching is actually getting through to them, and then you watch them in a live go, or you watch them at the tournament, and they do this thing that you showed them or whatever, and they like pull it off really nicely or whatever, and you're like, that it's great.
What's up, everybody? Thank you again for supporting the Pohata Podcast. This is a show where we talk about jiu-jitsu with jiu-jitsu people, very often black belts. This time around, I talk with Chris Dockel, a BJJ black belt who's probably considered Gen 2 OG here in Minnesota. We talk through his path to black belt, his passion for coaching kids in BJJ, and he strays a little bit from the usual belt rank advice, proving he's a meme nerd like I am for purple belt and actually dispenses some good life advice for white and blue belts. Before we jump in, we gotta shout out the sponsors of the show, Way of the Tiger Soap Company, a small local business created by one of us. You may not be good at jiu-jitsu, but you can smell good at jiu-jitsu. Also, per usual, shout out to Hamel Jiu-Jitsu in Hamel, Minnesota, my home away from my other home away from home. And without further ado, my conversation with Chris Dockel. All right, brother. I think we're going.
All right.
This one's kind of fun because I actually don't know you.
Yeah.
Don't hardly know anything about you other than internet friends and seeing you at tournaments and stuff.
Yeah. So there's a lot to talk about.
Let's do the state your name and where do you train and go into the background and stuff and just hear your take on it.
Yeah. I'm Chris Dockel, black belt. I train at Alliance St. Croix in Hudson, Wisconsin, just across the border. And also I train at Alliance Minneapolis in Edina.
Is that where you started?
No.
Is that the start? No? Okay.
So, I mean, you want to go way back?
Yeah,
let's do
it.
Okay. So, maybe spring or summer of 07, I think it was. Yeah, 07.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a real good group of guys. They're still my best buddies now. We had a buddy who was an MMA fighter from Florida move up to town, and he was a self-proclaimed brown belt. Now,
just the phrase self-proclaimed
yes,
brown belt.
So, and you know, and if you can go back to when you first started jiu-jitsu, if someone who kind of knew what they were doing was like, oh yeah, I'm a brown belt, you kind of believe them, you know what I mean?
You'd have
like,
no
you
way.
Have no basis of comparison,
right?
Whatever. So there was like 10 of us, and we rented gym space twice a week at Guerrilla Combat. I don't even know if Guerrilla Combat is a gym anymore. It was down in Eden Prairie.
I feel like it is.
It could be.
I just saw somebody.
The dude's name is Caleb. He's a really good kickboxer from what I remember.
Yeah, I think it's still around. I'm going to have to double check it. But anyway.
But yeah, so we weren't actually members there.
Yeah.
We just rented it. I think it was Tuesdays and Thursdays, and we'd go there, and it started off with MMA. So I started doing this to get into MMA, and we'd roll and we'd spar with gloves and headgear and stuff like that. And I really did not like getting punched. Like, it just was like not my thing.
Good instincts for the most part.
Yeah. So, but every time we'd do jiu-jitsu, it was like the days that we were doing it, I was like, oh, this is a good day, you know? So and started to really like it, started to excel at it a little bit. And then I think 3 months into it, I did my first tournament. It was back in the day. It was called Submission Hunt, and it was put on by the Academy. I don't know if you remember it or know much about it, because they don't do it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it. I saw something where they were working on doing it again, maybe did it as an in-house thing recently.
I hope
nobody quotes me on that, because it seems like I saw something about it again. But
it was for a local tournament, it was very well run. I mean, it wasn't like flash. I mean, back in the day, there wasn't, even the big tournaments didn't have like screens or anything, you know, even Naga didn't have, that was the big tournament that was local. Obviously, IBJJF was still big as well, but not too many people were traveling to the IBJJF.
Right.
Tournaments at that point in time.
Sub Hunt might actually be the most frequently cited tournament on this podcast.
Yes, because all of us old dogs, that's what we did.
That's what you had.
That's what we did. And so I did that. Nogi was my first tournament. It was fun. We trained for a little bit after that, and then it kind of just fizzled out. People were sick of doing it. My buddies just stopped doing it, and I still liked it. So I was living on campus with my wife at the time, girlfriend at the time, wife now.
Mm-hmm.
So I found the cellar. And in between the time that I we quit doing guerrilla combat, I had taken a fight, actually, in New Jersey or New York or something. They were going to fly me out. And yeah.
How does that
come to be? So my buddy Billy, the guy who moved up here from Florida, he had a lot of connections on the East Coast with fighting. I think he had something. He had a lot of fights. I think he had he was 45 and 20 or something like that. Like he had a lot of fights. Yeah. So he had a lot of connections, and someone needed, and now this is hilarious because at the time I was only weighing 132, and he got me a fight at 135, and not knowing anything about the fight world, I was like, oh yeah, I'll fight. Not knowing that guys that fight at 35 actually weigh 165.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was not a good idea, right? So I took the fight. We stopped doing the training at Guerrilla Combat. And then I was like, oh, well, I need to train.
I was going to say, that's not how you want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it was just, and you know, I'm 4 months into this whole deal, you know, so they were going to fly me out and all the stuff. So it was not money thing at all. But so I was like, okay, I got to find a gym. So I went to the cellar. I met up with Chris. Chris didn't do jiu-jitsu at all at the time. He was just a striking coach. And then he had a purple belt who ended up being a pedophile, which is super messed up.
Mm.
But his name was Rob, I think. And I met a few dudes that...
This person's long gone, I'm assuming.
Yeah, okay. I mean, he's in prison.
Yeah.
That's
kind of what I meant by long
yes,
gone.
Yes, long gone, yes. Yeah. 100%. So, good. But then I trained there and ended up getting Chris convinced me to not take the fight. And it was funny because when I told Billy that I didn't want to take the fight, because obviously Chris is very versed in the fight game and he knows, and he's like, I don't think it's a good idea. You just started this and we don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he talked me out of it, which I'm thankful for to this day. But I told Billy that I'm like, hey, I'm not going to take this fight. I'm not ready. Maybe in the future we can do it again, blah, blah, blah. And he was super bummed. And he's like, dude, the dude's already got you on the flyer and everything. And he sent me a photo. My name was on the flyer, all this stuff. And I was like, dude, this is not
too much.
Yeah, it's just too much. I'm really glad that it didn't go through with it, because it set forth what is today, you know what I mean? So
when it could have really jaded the experience, yes, overall, and who 100%. Knows if you know we might not be sitting here, that kind of thing.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And knowing what I know now about the fight world, had I known that then, I wouldn't want to have anything to do with the fight world. Like, I don't watch UFC it's become, I think I watch UFC, what are they on, they're coming up on 300 now or
they
something?
They just did 300.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I watched until about 150. And then I was done with it. The theatrics of it, yes. I just can't get. And even college wrestling is getting. I watched one of the big tournaments last year. I watched, and they come out and fireworks are blowing up and stuff. Yep. When these college athletes, I'm like, can't we just be good athletes and you know, and
I'm kind of there with you on that. It's kind of the low marketing seems to always come down to the lowest common denominator.
Yes.
And so every other sport, anything combat especially, seems to be bringing in WWE antics and theatrics and stuff. And I fully intellectually understand it, but
Yeah, like Gordon Ryan, and now he's pulling Nicholas Magali into the whole thing too. And you can see it if you've followed these people in their social medias for so many years, Nicholas was never like that until he linked up with Gordon, and they obviously had a conversation man, this is how you sell yourself.
Yep.
And now he's taking videos, flashing dollars and calling people out for $40,000. And it's just can't we just be good at jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
And leave it at that, you know?
But I mean,
but they're getting business. Paid. They're, yes. 100%. Money, and I won't I won't put them down for it. We'll
for
say
sure.
It's just not, it's making me take a step back from yeah. that whole world.
You realize had I gone that way and maybe gotten to any given level to have to play the game as it is.
Yeah,
now,
and that's not of, me. Like I if I were to ever be I'd want to, if I was ever like a superstar at something, I want to be like the Kirby Puckett's of the world, you know, like they said Kirby Puckett would, after his games, he would stay there for hours signing and talking.
Right. Good guy.
You know, just like really appreciative of the gift that he was given. You know, obviously he worked hard, but, you know, I'm a pretty big believer that like people are not like you and I, and they one day are like, I want to be amazing at this thing. I'm going to work really hard, and then they do it. You know, I mean, there's a couple of those those people in the world.
The phenoms and stuff.
Yes, yeah, but but for the most part, the best hockey players in the world, the best football players in the world, someone saw them play hockey or football or whatever at 6 years old, and they're like, that kid is going somewhere. Like, get them in all the things because they're that good. You know, so like, yes, they 100% worked for it, and they worked hard. They earned it. But they're also given a talent that...
And a chance.
Yeah, and it's, yes.
Yeah.
And that none of us got.
Right.
You know what I mean? So...
Right, right. We'll probably put an asterisk on the Kirby Puckett thing, just the sexual assault allegations later.
Yeah.
He was a good guy till he wasn't, evidently.
Yes.
We'll cover that. Somebody will bring it up to me, I'm sure. So.
Yeah, so before that, we'll call it. We'll call it.
So we're at the cellar, and you're not fighting.
Yep, so the cellar, I did the cellar, and... So they used to be at, actually it's funny because there's a, I just literally today I was working by where the first or the second cellar rather. I never trained at the first cellar because the cellar got their name because they were in the basement. Maybe Chris taught, I didn't listen to that podcast, but the cellar got the name because they were in the basement of like a, you know, what's that? Potter's, it's like a food truck. They do like
the Potter's Pasties.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that, like, kind of off of Cedar in that area. Yep. You can, if you drive by there, there still says Cellar Kickboxing on there. Well,
oh, really?
It did up until maybe last year.
Yeah. That's cool.
But it still says it. So they were in the basement of this building, and then they moved to the place that I trained up off of Old Highway 8 in New Brighton.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny because it was the cellar, and then like next door was like a gun shop. And I just drove by there today because I was working at a job there, and the gun shop is now another jiu-jitsu gym. It's the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. I don't know who the dude is.
He's
like a Gracie University dude.
Yeah,
and
he.
I said something on the Midwest Jiu-Jitsu Judo.
Yeah.
Facebook or whatever, and it blew. Like I was just asking about this.
I remember.
Yeah,
this
and it blew up. Like everybody's like, "Oh, he's an internet jiu-jitsu guy," and all this
turned
stuff.
Into all the hate.
Yeah. So,
yeah, justified or not or whatever. Like,
yeah,
God, why do we always do that?
Yes,
it goes again to the WWE culture thing.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I remember that very specifically. It's amazing how many gyms are around just in general.
Well, it's crazy because you know, like when I started, there was like I bet in Minnesota there was like an like every single black belt was like under Greg Nelson. Like there was very few black belts. I mean, I bet there was under 15 black belts in the entire state of Minnesota.
There's easily 100 now, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, between Alliance and M Theory, there's probably 75.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, so I mean, it's really cool to see the jiu-jitsu because that's how I used to view like California when I was going to tournaments as a blue belt and purple belt. You go to California and it was like, oh, you want to go train at Alliance or you want to go train at this academy or you want to go train at Gracie Baja or you want to go train, you know, it was like they're everywhere, Pedro Sauer, anything.
Yeah.
It was all over the place.
Yeah.
And
compared to out here, you were going to have access to purple belts and brown belts and maybe even several different black belt roles.
Yes, 100%.
You know, whereas like that was probably, you're scraping those together around here back in the day.
Like when I started, like the first time I was at the cellar, it was just there was a purple belt that was it and then a bunch of white belts and I think maybe two blue belts.
Yeah.
That was maybe it. And like when we go to spar, it was like the purple belt would be like, grab me because you want the best role in the room. And I was like, I don't want to, he's gonna fuck me up, you know, like I don't want. And now I think about like, you know, you go like I was just in class an hour ago and there was 15 black belts just
Hanging
just
out.
There
Ready
you know
to
what
go.
I mean, so it was like it's like a whole nother level now. It's pretty cool to see.
Yeah. It's like, I'm reasonably new to jiu-jitsu and obviously only in this area, but I landed at one of the gyms that's got some deeper roots,
absolutely.
Go back and back up, absolutely. You know, through Greg Nelson and Pedro Sauer, and to be like lined up and have a class go all the way around the mat for the initial lineup and the first half of it, purple belt and up. And then, 15 black belts lined up in front of you. It's like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's amazing. It does two things for newer jiu-jitsu people. It's very daunting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you stand at the back of that line and you look up and you're like, whew, that's a lot of skill, but then you end up, once you do it for long enough, you realize that any one of those people will help you with just about anything. Right. And, they're going to teach you. They're not there to beat you up and everything, you know what I mean? But it also,
for me, that line, I remember thinking, how many years is that to move from this corner of the mat in the line to that corner to then being over there? Like, oh my God.
Well, the truth is you really don't move that direction at all. Right. I mean, you kind of stay there and the left side of you kind of gets, or rather the right side of you just gets longer.
Right.
Right. And your belt changes, the colors make its way down.
And then the cycle of new people that come and go stays the same on your one side.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yep.
So you did you continue doing striking stuff?
No.
Or
so,
did you just go, you know
no,
what?
No. So done. Like I did, I think I striked, I did striking with, cause Chris, I mean, he's like a world-class kickboxer. And so I did some striking with him, and then he had fighters like, Brandon Buchholz.
Yeah. More internet friends.
Right? Yep. So he's, which is crazy that he's not a black belt, because he's been doing jiu-jitsu and judo for years and years and years, and I think just life gets in the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he was training for fights, and I was about his size. I was clearly smaller than him, but I was one of the smaller ones in the gym, so Chris would set me up, and we'd spar, and, I'd usually just try to take him down and do jiu-jitsu because I didn't want to strike at all. But it was beneficial for him, I suppose. So, so I would help guys that were smaller get ready for fights and stuff like that. But
having had a fleeting interest in MMA, you're officially one of the training dummies for the kickboxers and MMA guys.
Yes.
Just we only had so many bodies, so we got to figure this out.
Yeah. And they needed someone that was his size that would, move similar to someone his size. So, so I ended up being that guy. But then ultimately, Tom Schmitz ended up becoming once the seller moved to the U of M campus, I can't even remember exactly where it was, but it was closer to the U of M campus, whatever. Tom Schmitz, another Greg Nelson black belt, started teaching there 2 or 3 days a week, I think. And so then I trained with him until I got my blue belt. And then he opened his own school across in Oakdale, and I followed him there. It was like the original five. So it was like me, Jake Anderson, Ryan Potterbaum, Angelo Ficcello, and maybe one other. I can't remember right now offhand, but we left the cellar and then went to Spartan, and I trained at Spartan through all my belts. So,
cool.
And I think Spartan moved 3 times. In my time there. Yeah.
Oh, did they? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun to hear people be at a certain gym in a certain time frame and you're like, is that what that place is called or where is it? That's not where that is. And you kind of forget. We're talking 20 some years of existence for some of these places. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I think the sellers moved, like, I haven't been to their newest facility, but they were like under Potter's. Then they went to Highway 8. Then they went to the U of M. Then they went off of Highway C, and then so this is their fifth location.
They're
kind of in a mall location.
It's super weird. Like I've been there just to record with them a few times and stuff. You're like, okay, I'm at Old Navy, or whatever, and you go in and you head down and you're like, oh, this is fucking sweet.
Yeah, it looks like a really nice gym.
It's really cool. And then Ben went off, started his own kind of small gym. Then they had the opportunity to buy in ownership over there. So he brought all his gym equipment, like lifting stuff.
Oh, okay.
So they got mats, they got rings, and it's a full blown strength conditioning.
I need to get over there. I haven't seen Ben. Cool. I used to train with Ben, trained at Spartan.
Right, right.
So did like Ken runs their kids program over there. Yeah. I trained with Ken for a long time too.
Super, super cool facility. A lot of food smells though.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know that might be rough one way or the other, especially if you're getting ready for a fight.
Man, I can't imagine trying to cut and you leave the gym and there's just fast food everywhere stinking.
Well, you walk out, there's like a Canes and all this different stuff there and.
Be pretty rough, but that's fat guy thinking too, for sure, for sure. So you like jiu-jitsu, huh?
I love jiu-jitsu. It's the one thing. It's I've done this the longest of anything in my life. I think
it's your longest standing relationship.
Yes, with I mean I've done it. My friends and my wife, my family. I do a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I'm a addict.
You're a serial hobbyist.
Yes, perfect, perfect.
And I know the phrase because I am one.
Yes. So that is me to a T. If chances are, if it's a challenge, I've probably done it or dabbled in it of some sort to some degree. Usually when I do something and I find out I like it, I'm like all in, balls deep, and spend obscene amount of money and buy the best things when I don't need the best things and all this stuff. So, but no, jiu-jitsu, it's hard to describe how I feel about it because you get emotional thinking about if you look back on like what it's done for you and you don't actually see it in the moment.
Yeah.
But then you realize like, you know, like I've been doing push-ups and sit-ups before my warm-ups for 17 years now. And there's people who like can't do 5 push-ups, just to do 5 push-ups.
Right.
You know,
it would be a fitness challenge,
right? 100%. You know, but that's like our warm-up. You know, like you just do that type of shit.
Right.
You know, so it's like,
I think jiu-jitsu is good for people like you and I now that we've both established that we're serial hobbyists because it's not particularly expensive. Like the gym membership is expensive as far as a gym membership goes. And
but I mean,
these are expensive as far as outfits go, but you get one or two and they'll last you like 5, 6, 8 years if you take care of them. Right.
Yep.
And the topic is deep enough that you got to be in for a decade or more.
Yep.
You're not, the novelty's not going to wear off if you are the curious type, which if you are a serial hobbyist, you're the curious type.
Yep.
So you're hooked. You're good.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to see results for jiu-jitsu, it takes some time, you know, like, I like the phrase jiu-jitsu's, it's like Novocaine. Just give it time, you know, like you have to wait to see the results a little bit, you know, obviously Novocaine works a little faster than jiu-jitsu, but like the idea of it is like there's in the adult world for belt ranking, if you're going to go off of rankings and little accolades, I suppose, it's like, there's only 4 of them. Right. You know, you get your blue belt, you get your purple belt, you get your brown belt, you get your black belt. So if you can't find little victories in between, I mean, minus the stripes, whatever, stripes are stripes. It's
athletic tape.
Yes. You know, but if you can't find small victories in between the athletic tape, the color change of your belt, you're not going to survive in this world because it's like you need to be looking, instead of being like, oh man, I got my first belt. It's like, it's more like, oh man, I just passed Matt's guard and I've never passed his guard before, you know, like, or maybe not even a positive, like Matt didn't pass my guard this time.
Now we're talking,
you know what I mean? Like, cause it's more along those lines, you know, it's like, cause usually especially in the beginning ranks is you're not doing anything to anyone. You're having things done to you. So it's like, man, today I didn't get my guard passed. That's a huge deal. And like, I remember watching, I don't remember where I was. I was watching when, I don't remember which Meow brother it was, but he got his guard pass for the first time in like 6 years or something. It was at a major tournament and there was people there and it didn't look like anything. It wasn't like a fancy pass. It wasn't anything, you know, but he got his guard pass.
The knee went from here to here and my body
and
was
he got
on the
3 points and jiu-jitsu people were like, whoa, that just happened. It hasn't happened in 6 years. And there is a couple people there that were either new to jiu-jitsu or didn't do jiu-jitsu. And they're like, it's like they were watching golf.
Yeah.
They're like, what just happened? They're like, you don't understand. Like doesn't just happen.
Yeah. You know? It's just two dudes laying on each other.
Yeah, like they couldn't understand. Yeah, and yeah. And so that those are the victories I think if you want to last in this sport or art, rather, mm-hmm. I like to refer to as an art, but that's how you can last.
And to not to get too heavy with it, but that's part of why it works as a metaphor, I think, for life. Because, like, tell me about, you know, what you did last Tuesday.
As far
as? Or the previous Tuesday. As far as anything. You got nothing.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's not these, it's not a, like a movie where it's this constant thrill ride of a plot line.
Yes. Especially you know when you're, like, married and kids. It's like, you get on this, like, this ride that's kind of stagnant. I mean, you have some, it's enjoyable, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because you're watching your kids do things, you're with your wife and all this stuff, but it's like, there isn't too many of those like, whoa, that was fucking awesome, yeah. you know? Yeah, it's just because you don't have time to do that stuff. You're in right. the daily grind kind of deal.
Yeah, much like jiu-jitsu, where yes. like, if you don't get accustomed to seeing those tiny, seemingly pointless details and mundane things like, oh, I got on the other side of that guy's knees.
Yes.
Which sounds so ridiculous, but like
to the untrained ear, right. they
and,
don't know.
Yeah. And so like you're so busy with day-to-day life and just regular life, it's easy to not see those small things.
Yep.
Changes in your kids and changes in your career and other relationships or whatever.
Yep, absolutely.
But like, man, if you can come to relish those small details, it seems really, really huge.
Yep. I love
that's
it.
That's too heavy.
No, it's never too heavy. Man. It's jiu-jitsu. No, I love it. Like when my students or my kids will come, like they'll say, oh, I did this move today, and they get excited about it, you know, and I've really trained my oldest three kids. They all do jiu-jitsu, and I've really trained them as far as like when other people are getting promotions or even when they get promotions, like to be proud of it and to be happy with it, but don't dwell on that part of this game. Like there's a whole bigger picture mm-hmm. that I'm really trying to get into their head that like, yes, that's awesome. I'm very proud of you that you got your new belt, you got a stripe today. But I'm more excited to hear like when you come home and you're like, Papa, I passed this guy's guard today and I never passed this guy's guard. And I'm like, that's cool, you know.
Finding joy in the in between.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, it's not just a graduation ceremony and then the first day next year.
Yes,
lots of stuff going on in between.
100%.
Your oldest three?
Yeah, I have four.
Oh my god,
I have four.
Oh yeah. My, I'm already tired. And all three, the youngest one's probably not old enough. That's why they're not doing jiu-jitsu, huh?
Yep. And so my youngest has cerebral palsy. So, okay. And he will 100% do jiu-jitsu because I think. Actually, at M Theory, you guys have a dude who has cerebral palsy.
The one and only.
Yeah, he's Jim Vang. Asian dude.
Jim Vang.
What's his name?
Vang.
Jim Vang. Yeah, I've never.
He's a Hmong Asian. Yeah. He's my boy. I gotta get him on here because he's hysterical.
That would be a. I would love to hear what he has to say.
Super unique experience of jiu-jitsu too. I keep chatting with him every time I bump into him.
Absolutely, you should do that. I haven't actually been in the same room with him. To actually talk, because it's funny how it happened. It was almost like someone was setting it up, but before my youngest son was born, and I didn't know anything about cerebral palsy before my youngest mm-hmm. son was born. I had a couple of cases that I knew of when I was a kid. Actually, one was a lifter, actually. And I knew him in the weight room is kind of the most of the time that I spent with him in mm-hmm. high school. But they were more extreme cases. And,
it'll vary a lot.
Yes, there's a huge range.
There's some
range.
Folks you won't even realize.
Yes,
have
like I could have cerebral palsy and you'd never know it. You know, and so
let
I don't
me
even,
pause. I think Jim Vang is CP. I don't want to say that for certain.
I honestly think and his I don't know what you call it. Not attributes,
like signs and symptoms.
Signs and symptoms that I can see with my my very untrained eye.
Yep, same here.
It seems along that way. So, sorry if I if I'm jumping to a conclusion. But either way, he's got some form of disability but he's still doing that. And that's people ask me like, is Wallace gonna do jiu-jitsu? I'm like 100%. He's the one that I want to do jiu-jitsu out of any. You know what I mean?
Right.
But. No, yeah, he's still young. He turns 4 in like next week.
Yeah, most gyms you're not even in the program till 4. I don't think. Yeah.
Yep. So
all the kids like it, just like you.
So my oldest has done it since he's 3, and he's going to be 13 here. Oh, wow. So he's getting to that teenager years where he's kind of like rebelling against everything. So he likes jujitsu. He does really well at jujitsu, actually. And he's a real tough kid. Like, he doesn't tap. He doesn't. He's stubborn like me. Mm-hmm. He's got that hard head.
If
like
you didn't
me.
Say it, I was going to say it, and I don't even know you. Yep, but yep. He's got dead stubbornness.
Yes, 100%. He does. Does other things. So like he does lacrosse. As he's gotten a little bit older, he's gotten into competitive paintball with me. So he does it the least out of those three. I think he does it once or twice a week when he's doing like lacrosse is just like ramping up right now. Mm-hmm. So he does it once a week now with lacrosse being 3 or 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. So trying to let him keeping him busy, but also letting him be a kid. Yeah, you know, my second kid, Arlo, he really enjoys jujitsu. Like he's an artist and he doesn't have any interest. We're like, you want to play lacrosse this year? You want to play, you want to do this? You want to do that? My wife and I are not huge mainstream sport people. We both grew up being mainstream sport, but I'd almost rather see him get into snowboarding more or doing, one up jujitsu, whatever. Yeah,
cool, unique stuff. Yeah, there's so rock many climbing, options.
You know, as a kid,
none of that stuff was available when I was a kid. No, like 100%. Lacrosse was just becoming a thing, but I was Mr. Shot Put guy. Rugby was happening, but like none of us knew the guys that play rugby. Yep. It was like, where does rugby happen? Forget about everything else you just listed. Like, are those sports? Can I get involved in that? It just didn't exist in my head anymore.
And it just wasn't presented, right? Yeah, even if it was available, it wasn't available in my school. Yeah. And my parents were not about to go way out of their way to get me into some obscure sport that they don't care about.
They didn't understand.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. You know, so I mean, shot put, that's cool, man. My wife was a pole vaulter in high school, which I didn't know high schoolers pole vaulted until I started dating her. You know,
And they're the crazy ones on the track team, nuts. By the way.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh well, my wife's pretty. She's pretty mellow.
Them and the distance runners, you got to be a certain brand of crazy to vault yourself over a pole.
Yes,
or
100%.
Over a barrier and that, or a pole, and then I've running seen, like, 5 miles is just nuts.
So. I do jiu-jitsu, so I don't have to run. You know, like.
Got the fitness, and I can fight you if I need to.
Yeah, let's just do this right here. I'm not going to run away from you, right? You know,
get tendonitis trying to stay safe. I don't need that.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's cool. And I've seen you just a couple weeks ago at the Fuji thing. You're coaching kids too.
Yes.
You coach with the gym, or did you just happen to be the guy that could show up that day? Or?
Nope. So actually, coaching jiu-jitsu is a huge part of my jiu-jitsu. I would say it almost saved my jiu-jitsu career, rather. Because when I was a blue belt, I got my blue belt in 10, so maybe 2011-ish, we were hard times, we'll call it hard times, but we were about to have our first kid, bills were piling up, and it was like, we need to cut some money here and there and start focusing on what actually needs to be paid for. So I went to Tom. I was like, and I like had tears in my eyes. Went into his office. I'm like, hey man, I'm canceling my lifetime membership. We're not rock climbing anymore. I got to get rid of the gym membership because we're just trying to be responsible. We got this kid coming, and like I'm like crying at this point. And he's like, you know what? And this is right when Spartan started, because Spartan started in 11, I think. Yeah, so it was right when the gym opened. And he's like, you know what? Why don't you train one day a week? I'll put your payments on hold. Train one day a week, and you can help me teach the kids class. And because I'm going to start a kids class. There wasn't a kids, obviously a gym is open. So he's like, there wasn't a kids class yet. He's like,
this is already good because it's mutually beneficial. Like, let me help you out. Yes, but at the same time, you know, this is going to be a good thing.
Yes, he's like, I need, you're a small guy. Yep. You know, he didn't actually say that, but that, let's be real. That's why, you know, and it's an attribute that I can bring to the table for coaching kids. He's like, I need help training the kids, blah, 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 help me out. And from that point forward, I haven't paid a gym membership fee since 2011 or 2012. So teaching kids class or instructing kids saved my jiu-jitsu in a sense. Who knows if I would have came back to it, right?
Well, let's also just be honest. Like, that's where people fall away. You're a blue belt. Family's coming together. Yep. Times are tighter than ever. Before you know it, 10 years has gone by. Yep. Like, that's the story.
And then it gets harder to come back.
Right? It's not going to get any easier as each month goes by. So, yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah. So, in a sense, And I love it. It's really fun to see. Because, like, the kids... they goof off sometimes in class and
me too.
Yeah. So everybody does, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you wonder sometimes if like what you're saying or what you're teaching is actually getting through to them. And then you watch them in a live go, or you watch them at the tournament and they do this thing that you showed them or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they like pull it off really nicely or whatever. And you're like, that it's great. I realize
they learn quicker, easier, better than adults do.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And they're more receptive. You know, like as adults, even as a newer jiu-jitsu, even as doing jiu-jitsu for a while and I have someone show me something, there's a part of me that's like, well, I already do that. Why am I listening to you do? But then I reel myself back in and I'm like, oh no, this, I can learn from anybody. Right. Yeah, you know what I mean? But kids are just like, okay,
open book. I don't know a thing.
That's what we do. Like, that's how we're going to do it. So, you know.
What's the hardest part about coaching kids in tournament?
In tournament? So it used to be a lot harder. And I think because obviously with experience, right? We grow with experience. We were kind of talking about that before. In the beginning, it was really hard because I was like, win, win, win. Like, you know, and I wouldn't be hard on the kids, but it was like, that was the focus, right? And I would yell and scream, and everybody who knows me knows that I'm a loud sideline coach. You know, I'm a loud corner.
That's the picture I posted yesterday. Yes. With the handcuff.
Yes. Yeah, yes. 100%. I'm still loud, but now it's not as angry. I think if you were to turn back the clock to when I would corner kids in 2013, 14, 15, whatever, whenever my kids started, from Spartan started competing, and you compared the audio from there till just this last tournament, it's much more positive. You know, it's more about like just them going out and having fun. Whereas before it was like, I had this vendetta out that I wanted all my kids to beat all the other kids. I didn't see the bigger picture.
I think the way you would phrase it is you were coaching for you.
Yes, 100%.
Now you're coaching for them.
Yes, 100%. So I've grown up.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, yeah. I think as I watch it, because I have zero kid exposure. Like the kids I interact with at the gym, because they're in between classes or, you know, they're hanging out and maybe even rolling with the open roll adults or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's like the entirety of my interaction with kids.
Yep.
I'm the second youngest person in my family at like 39 years old, you know? So I, for some reason I get a kick out of, and that's why I'm getting pictures of coaches at tournaments, especially with the kids. Cause to me, it looks like you're just trying to manage whoever's in the match and readying for which one's going to cry. And then responding like a responsible adult to that.
Yep.
You know, so like, yeah, the mean sort of let's go, let's win seems way off the table.
Yeah.
But I have zero experience. So,
yeah. And for me, it used to be like, I remember specifically having kids at tournaments, and like when the arm would go, just start to go straight, the ref would stop it. And I got up and I yelled at this ref and I was like, he was not going to tap to that, you know? And now, like, just this last tournament, like, I was almost yelling at the refs for not stopping it early enough. Like, I'm much more, first there, I'm in the corner to support and everything, but my first job is to make sure that my kid out there, whoever, whether it be my kid or just my student, is safe. So, like, I was watching... like a couple times I stepped on the mat and I was about to stop it myself just because my kid's arm was about getting stuck or doing something funny.
Right.
And the ref did their job, you know,
and
it's not even a question. Like, even if the kid is mad, I'm like, hey, I'd rather you lose than lose movement in your arm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You gotta do your homework tonight.
Yeah.
We need you using your arm for sure. Yeah. Again, it's so far outside my skill set. I can't even imagine coaching kids at that level. Even when I was a high school strength and conditioning coach, and it was a junior high, high school combined, still the youngest I would interact with was like 13, 14.
Sure.
You know, dramatically different than 9.
Yes.
You know, or 8 or whatnot.
Or 5.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, definitely man. Different than that. You coach adults and stuff?
Yep. Right?
I mean, you run yep. adults classes and yep. whatnot?
Yeah. No, excuse me. Yep. So I teach the intermediate curriculum, I guess you could say. It's the class that's not fundamentals, right? It's like fundamentals class is just for new people and people who just want to sharpen skills.
Hand here, foot here.
Yep.
Move like this.
And there's no real life sparring, mm-hmm. right? I imagine M Theory has something
yep,
along the
pretty
lines.
Close
right?
to that,
the more well organized gyms, that's how they operate, right? They don't put the brand new people in with the wolves, right? I mean, it's not a good business plan. It's not a good just overall plan in humanity to like take these people who don't even know what a shrimp is, and now you're going to have them go with someone
right.
who knows everything that's going on and expect them to stick around, right? So I teach the class that is basically we do technique and then we spar at the end, right? I mean, so it's that class for every, I mean, I imagine at most gyms are that way.
The call gyms that we call that jujitsu.
Yes. Yes.
Drill some stuff, practice some stuff, do some jujitsu.
Put it into play.
Yeah. Yeah. You got, I'm going to back up a bit. You got your black belt from Tom.
Yep.
You said all of them.
Yep.
When was that? How long did it take you?
So I started in 07 and I got my black belt in 17. So it was like just shy of a year, I guess, if you look at the months, but. Mm-hmm. I mean, sorry, 10 years.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. So I was like just shy of 10 years. So we'll just call it 10 years, right?
Super fast.
Yes. Really fast.
Why?
Huh?
Why? You just take to this stuff?
It just intuitively makes sense? I mean, that's a going rate, right? 10 years.
I consider that fast.
I mean, in some standards, I suppose.
I guess I'm addicted to big picture.
Sure.
Most people don't know what jiu-jitsu is. Most people thought about trying it. Another version of most people tried it, never came back.
Yep.
You know, and you go up the line and then you say, okay, most people that stick with it have stuck with it, continued to train and maybe still are training, don't have black belts. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So 10 is super fast. I mean, you hear the people say, you know, yeah, it's about 10 years to a black belt, but like, is it?
I mean, it
10 to 15.
Everyone's journey is different, right?
For and sure.
Mine, luckily, and hopefully it continues, is I didn't have any major injuries. I think that's the major injuries, major life things that take you away from the mats, right?
Yeah.
I trained with people who had really bad injuries that took them away mm-hmm. for years. Also trained with people who like went to school to be a doctor. So then they like moved away for mm-hmm. residency and they just didn't have time to be on the mat, so they had to focus on their career and everything,
yeah.
or opened a business or something, whatever.
I know a guy that's been at it 20 plus years or something, and he's a brown belt, but he had a major health scare, cancer related stuff, you know, removing part of the large intestine and these kinds of things,
geez.
As I understand it, right? I don't know. Again, don't quote me on that. Same thing as Jim Vang. I don't know
yep.
people's medical history, but you know, he's still training. And has been introducing his son to it. His son's also a wrestler, so look out for that guy.
Oh, right.
Eventually.
Right.
You know, so his pace changed, his plan changed, his intention with it changed. And
yep.
and so, I mean, there again, to a guy like that, 10 years is fast,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah, absolutely.
Super fast.
Yeah, so I guess to answer that question, yes, but I was very lucky that my journey was not, it could have been, right? Just like I said earlier, but wasn't.
You were right there.
I was on the edge.
Per our previous little talk, you were given the right chance at the right time. And,
yes, and I'm very thankful. I don't forget that. I never forget that. But yes, I was very lucky that I didn't have, you know, I had injuries, bumps and bruises here and there mm-hmm. that took me out for 6 months, probably, that at the most, probably.
Right.
Again,
inside of 10 years, what's 6 months?
Right, yeah. Yep. But there's, I know plenty of people that have, they were taken away for years,
right?
You know, that they can't train, you know? So I just talked to Liz. I forget her last name. She trains at Rebel. She used to train at Alliance. She trains at Rebel. Purple belt, jiu-jitsu, black belt, and judo. Amazing throws.
nightmare.
Yeah, she and she's like
ducking her when I'm over there.
She's tossed, like, she's my size but like lighter, and she hip tossed me the last time we rolled, and it was like full ipa. I mean, if it was judo, it was over, right? But like, it was like flipped, we both went horizontal, and we were maybe 3 feet in the air, and she came down and just boom on top of me, and I was like, oh, that shouldn't happen to me, but it did, you know. And really good jiu-jitsu, but yeah, she just found out, you know, when you see someone you haven't seen in a long time, oh, you've been training, blah, blah, whatever. She's like, no, I actually am not going to be able to train for another year because I have to have hip surgery because something's growing funny with my hip or whatever.
Cyst or bony, something, all that weird
whatever,
stuff.
Whatever, something weird happened, you know. She's only 21 years old, 22 years old.
What?
And, yeah. Yeah.
None of that makes sense.
No. And I said, dang, Liz, you're like an old lady. And she laughed, you know. We're joking.
I don't even mean the injury thing doesn't make sense. You said she's a black belt in judo?
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. What the fuck? See, that's what your kids will be.
Well, we'll see.
Theoretically, right? Everybody's experienced that kid who's been training for 8+ years.
Well, and I
comes to the right age and becomes a blue belt. And you're like, that's not a blue belt.
Yes. And I don't remember. I listened to one of your podcasts. I don't know who you're talking. We were talking about kids.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's 100%. Like, is a big difference between someone who's been doing jiu-jitsu since they were 3 and they're 16 now and they get their blue belt versus me who came in at 23 and I have my blue belt in a year and a half. Like, the concepts of jiu-jitsu still don't make sense to a blue belt that's been training for a year and a half. Whereas, like, you say knee cut to a 16-year-old who's been doing jiu-jitsu since 3 years old, they're like, oh, you just do this.
Yeah. You know? Which version
you get the underhook and you cut the knee. Yeah. That's all you do.
What version you want. I give you a few varieties.
Or
they might not be able to explain it, but they can just do it.
Yes. Which that's the hard part about kids getting into it really early, is because a lot of it, they just fell into it because they're just trial by fire, by air or whatever.
Well, you know, I think I've quoted it on here before, but 8 to 10 or 8 to 12 is like prime motor development eras.
Yes.
So they're just accidentally absorbing everything their body needs to know at that point. What was your favorite phase of training? Maybe even favorite belt?
Oof. I mean, I have, it's kind of like, you know, like when people ask you, like, if you have a favorite kid, like, I obviously don't have a favorite kid, but I definitely have this kid is my favorite for this in this realm, and this one's my favorite in this realm of whatever we're talking about. So I think with jiu-jitsu, I have favorite belts for this and favorite belts for that, you know.
I like the way this kid shines here.
Yes.
And I like the way this kid shines
here. Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
So being a black belt's awesome because it's a black belt, right? It's like the ultimate goal, right? But then you realize inside of this that the ultimate goal is never attainable because you can never learn everything, right? But it's cool to inspire people, and it's cool that people want to come to you and ask you questions. And, you know, your problem solving after you've been doing it long enough is, it's funny because all black belts know this. Like, someone will come to you as a black belt and they'll ask you, like, hey, how do you do this? And you won't know what the fuck they're talking about. And you're like, well, let me see you do it. And that let me see you do it is 100% them buying time to think about, what the fuck am I going to tell this person?
Right. Right.
And then you see it and then you're like, but the problem solving is still there. Right. So like, it's cool to be able to know enough about a thing to be able to take something that you have never actually seen someone do, because it's probably something weird that doesn't happen very often.
Something that's never been part of your game.
Yes. Yes.
But you can still analyze.
Yes. And you can look at it and be like, oh, well, this is why it's not working, because you're not getting underhook, you're not controlling the hip, you're not whatever. Right. But I like that aspect of being black belt.
Let's be honest, wrecking fools.
See, being 140 pounds, I don't wreck a lot of people, right?
Don't misinterpret what I mean by wreck. I don't mean like smash and violence. I mean like I'm a step or two ahead for the next 6 minutes.
Yes, it's cool.
And that's kind of cool to say.
It feels cool sometimes, you know, when you're rolling and you like, you can tell this person's trying really hard and you like are having conversation with the person rolling next to you. And you, not that you're trying to humiliate that person that you're rolling with, but you know that they're humiliated. Like they're trying really, really hard, and you're like, "So, Matt, what are you having for dinner tonight?" You know, meanwhile, I got my shoulder smashed in this person's chin, and they can't move. You know,
like, see, I having been on the receiving end of that treatment, like the person is owning me and then cracking jokes. I get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, what level of mastery is that? Like, okay, I want
to. And you'll be there one day.
I want to be there. You know, it's super, super cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. So,
lowest common denominator.
But in my personal journey, I think white belt was awesome because I'm a pretty athletic human being. So like when at white belt, I was a white belt for like a year, and I bet I did 10 tournaments in that year, and I don't think I lost one. I might have lost one, and it was because it was like an absolute of some sort, but it was cool, like beating the crap out of people.
You felt like you landed.
Yes. You're like, all right, yes. I was like, this is it, you know? And
it's cool.
And it felt that way, but if you step back and like if black belt Chris was watching white belt Chris being like, oh yeah, puffing my chest and being like, this is awesome. Like I would be like, well, dude, you just like muscled your way through all this stuff and athleticized yourself through, you didn't do jiu-jitsu at all. You just like ran around and did
created panic.
Yes. 100%. And you just got the better half of someone who's not as athletic as you know? So that was fun. And then, you know, middle of blue belt, I figured out like, oh, I can't just athleticize myself out of every situation. I gotta actually learn, you know.
So white belt was sexy because it was like new.
Yes.
And apparently I'm good. I'm the man.
Yeah, and everybody's like, good. You know, people would be like, I'd win a tournament, right? I'd win a tournament against guys that were doing this for a year and a half or whatever. And I was like, oh yeah, I've only been doing like I won my first jiu-jitsu tournament. I went against three guys. One of them actually still trains, Topper Braddock of Akagi. He was one of the four guys in the tournament in my bracket. And I won that. And like, I was training for 3 months at that time. And, you know, it feels cool for people like, man, how long have you been training? And, oh, man, I just started like 3 months ago. I'm like, what? Oh, man, you got you know, and it feels cool, right? It's total vanity. It's total like... pat yourself on the chest, or, you know, and whatever. But it wasn't jiu-jitsu. Like I wasn't good. I was just athletic. You know?
So then blue belt you liked because it was growing up and realizing there's a game to play.
Yes, yes. And I remember it specifically. There's this dude, he used to train at the he joined like the Peace Corps. He lives in like Africa now or something, but his name's Paul. And he used to train at the academy, and then moved to the east side of the cities and then started training at Spartan with us. And he was like probably just shy of 6 feet tall, but he probably weighed 135 pounds. So he was just a string bean dude. And he was a purple belt, I believe. Yeah, purple belt. No, I think he was a blue belt. Whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I was a blue belt. And I remember seeing him across, and he was new at the time, you know, he just came to the gym, and I'm like, I'm gonna wreck this dude, man. He'd like, when he'd run in warm-ups, it was kind of like he'd look funny when he ran, you know, and whatever. And I'm like, I'm gonna tear this dude up. And he turned me inside out, and I'm like, that was the turning point when I was like, damn, I need to learn jiu-jitsu. I can't just like be an athletic dude and get through this if I'm gonna continue. So
probably the biggest moment.
Yeah, that's a huge turning point. And I think everybody hits that turning point.
And they quit.
Yep. Yep.
Right. That's the tricky thing where you're like, oh crap, there's a whole ocean I gotta explore here.
Yeah. Well, there's like, it's like when you first step onto the jiu-jitsu mat, like one of two things happens. And maybe it's the turning point too.
Mm-hmm.
One of two things happens at that turning point. You do jiu-jitsu and you come in, you do the trial, whatever, and you get wrecked by a 16-year-old girl who, you know, weighs 102 pounds, maybe soaking wet. Right. And you either say, holy shit, I need to learn this because this stuff really works. Or you're like, my ego is really hurt and I don't want to do this anymore. I can't take that beating ever again. So luckily I was an adult enough to be like, okay, let's learn the rest of this game and let's utilize the athleticism, but also let's not have to fall back on that. Let's
generate some
kind of game, you know?
Yeah. What, did you stay pretty competitive as you climbed the ranks and stuff?
Did you
compete at each belt, I guess?
I did. I competed most at, obviously, white, blue, and purple. Brown, it started to fall off, but I also started having, I had three kids at brown belt.
Right.
And you just get older and more stuff gets put on your plate.
Yeah.
Real
life, they call that.
Yes. Yes, 100%. So, but I still I compete at black belt every now and then. My biggest gripe about competing nowadays is it's really expensive and there's not a whole lot of payback for it if you do well, other than the clout of saying I'm a world champion, I think that's an amazing accomplishment, right? There's only a handful of them in the world,
right?
At one point I was chasing it, and now, like, for me to go to like World Masters or any of these tournaments, it's a minimum $1,000.
Yeah,
right, to possibly win a medal and a photo on a podium, you know. So it's I enjoy competition in jiu-jitsu. I don't enjoy the money aspect of it.
What's actually currently required to go and be competitive.
Right. And it's, I've been selfish with this for so long that I look down the barrel of my wife and four kids. And for me to not only spend $2,000 of our money, but also take away 4 days that I would A, get to be with them, B, putting my wife in charge of four children and all their activities, you know what I mean? And just
to mention probably extra training days for months.
And then training leading up to it. It's like, hey, can you go get this and that? Well, no, I got to train because I'm going to this tournament, you know?
Yeah.
Don't you understand? And so like...
We need mayonnaise. Yes. Go to the store.
You know, so it's like... Trying to not be as selfish with it, I suppose, because she's already very generous with me and my hobbies and all the stuff that I do.
Tolerating you.
Yeah. Yes. So like at black belt, I did World Masters once, but other than that,
it's cool, man.
Right.
Rock and roll.
Yeah. But other than that, the tournaments that I've done and competitions that I've done with jiu-jitsu as a black belt, they've all been like an invite only of some sort.
Like a fight to win kind of thing.
Yeah, fight to win or like TCI or the brewery stuff, you know, like super fight stuff like that.
Brewjitsu. So, yep. That's still around? It was like my first year showing up to jiu-jitsu. I don't know. I was like, this is a great idea, and you kind of haven't heard of it.
Yeah,
since
I don't. There actually, no, it did just happen.
What?
It happened in Hudson. It was at the brewery in downtown Hudson.
Not the same person organizing it,
sure, yeah. But it was at a brewery,
same idea, a Hop and Barrel or something.
It was there.
Great idea. I actually
got asked to fight that day, but I was out of town that day.
Again, being an adult.
Yes.
Damn it. Yes. I'm already out of town.
Yeah, we're actually think I might have said yes to it, like off the cuff, and then I went home and I was like, hey, I told my wife, and she's like, no, we're doing this on that. I'm like, oh, damn.
That's why I'm afraid to look at my phone right now. I'm like, what am I missing? Because I asked Chris to come. Let's see what happens here. Whatever. That's funny. What, when you, would you say 2017, you got your black belt?
Yep.
What's changed since? Jiu-jitsu-wise.
Jiu-jitsu, like my jiu-jitsu or like jiu-jitsu around here?
All of it. Go ahead.
My jiu-jitsu, I don't think my jiu-jitsu changed much. I look at things a little bit differently as far as like spacing. You know, I used to be very, and like Ryan Potamom, I trained with Ryan for a long time and Akilah as well. I used to play this very underneath you guard, deep half, X guard, you know, the guards that you'd think I would play, right? Being a small 140 pound guy. But now I'm realizing that maybe as an older, maybe it's because I'm getting older. Like yes, I don't, I still go to those positions, but if I can get to like butterfly guard, or if I can play like a sit up guard where I'm not 100% underneath you, I tend to lean that way a little bit more, I suppose. See,
my impression on like deep half and all that underneath him stuff is that it's better suited for somebody like me. And maybe this
it's just harder for you to get to
knowledge.
that spot.
Fair, but I
but
can
once
handle
you do,
the suffering better.
Yes, and then once you do, you are a very big rock underneath that person, so it's hard for them to gain awareness of the mat, right? Because that's the whole idea of deep half, is like you kind of become the mat, and you're dictating what part of their body touches the mat, right? Because they really want to put their feet down and their hands down to get a good base, but you're controlling that. Like you elevate their foot, so it's just floating there, and they're waiting to be able to put that foot down. And as soon as you let them start to think they can put it, then you take it away, and that's where the sweep happens.
Right.
You know, so. But that's, other than that, I don't know. I still play those guards, and I still play kind of the same idea. I still lead with my head. You know, I never wrestled, but I have people tell me every day that I have a very wrestling style.
Sure.
But jiu-jitsu,
highly complimentary, don't you think?
What's that?
That you have a high wrestling motivated style or whatever. I'd be like, hell yeah, I do.
yeah.
Did you wrestle? No, I didn't wrestle.
Don't critique my wrestling.
Sounds cool though.
Yeah. But
I'm gonna back you up one more time. Do you think because you taught so much so often that once you landed at black belt, where like theoretically you're the expert in the room and you can start teaching other people, that it didn't really change your perspective? Everything I've ever done and pursued and competed in, once I started coaching other people in it, it like revolutionized my understanding, where it's like, I wish I was coaching it while I was doing it so that I could
have
done
things
even
differently.
Better.
Yeah. You definitely see things differently. And once you're like, cause there's plenty of black belts out there that are just black belts. They don't teach, you know, they're just part of the gym.
Yep.
But when you're teaching, you see people screw things up differently, and you,
in ways you never
and
have done.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah,
you never had to deal with that problem.
I screwed that up, but I screwed it up like this way.
Yeah.
But now this person's screwing it up like this, and it's like, oh, well, that doesn't work with my game, so now I understand how I can try to fix your game. You know, it's and that's what's awesome. Like, when I'm teaching jiu-jitsu, I don't teach quote-unquote small guy jiu-jitsu. Like, I do, but I also teach big guy jiu-jitsu. I teach jiu-jitsu, like, so like if you are yourself in my class, or if you're another person like me in my class, you're gonna benefit from what's being taught. Like, it might not be your favorite thing, you know, like you might not be a spider guard guy, you might not be a deep half guy, whatever it is, but the things, it's not gonna be like, well, because you're 260 pounds and 6'3", you can't do this, so just sit on the side, and we're going to do this lesson for us small people, you know? I think it was said once, I think Kyle Tara, at one point in jiu-jitsu, I guess, more recently, he had, one of his students was, like, the best heavyweight black belt in the world, and I can't remember the name offhand, but Kyle Tara is, like, the smallest human being.
I think I again, minus the name, I think I remember this, or I've seen seen
and
stuff,
which
about
is
this.
Amazing, because Kyle Tara is like a reigning, one of the best rooster weights to ever play the game, yet he has a student who is one of the best heavyweights to be playing the game at the current time. And that's, I think that's a big feather in the hat for Kyle to be able to say that,
have that versatility as a coach.
Yes, 100%.
You got jiu-jitsu goals now? I can kind of glean your answer to this, I think, but...
Well, my goals now are more geared towards my students, not me.
That's what I was gleaning.
Yes. I think the best I ever did is in a jiu-jitsu accolade was I took second at World Masters at Brown Belt, which is... I'm super jacked on it, but that's the... Other than winning a tournament here and there, whatever, that's my highest whatever. Now, looking at what I would probably be more excited if one of my students got to that level and did XYZ. Whether it's one of my kid students or my adult students, seeing them advance in that realm is much more cool for me.
Seeing them beat you.
Yes.
And maybe not literally beat you, although, yes.
Get to a higher position. Get past what I had once set out to get to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I've had high school boy lifting clients, power lifters, that have set American records and you know, leveled up to certain rankings and all these things. And it's super fucking awesome to see. It feels almost better than anything I ever achieved. Yeah.
100%. Because it's just, deal. I mean, you take a part of the victory for yourself, but it's also more just like seeing it from the outside, right? It's a different feeling, I think, when you're like chasing this dream and you're doing all this, whatever. Whereas like, it's hard to see it through the hard work when you're doing it. But when you watch someone do it, you actually see the hard work come to light when it happens. Whereas when you're in the middle of it, you might not see the extra work that you're doing. Like, you're doing it because someone's having you do it, or you're signed up for it, but it's hard to move through that, I think, and then see it when it actually happens.
And then another layer to it, and I'm grateful to have had this experience. One of my American record kids, who's like 14 at the time, which is weird to think about, like American record holding powerlifters
at 14, you know, 14 that's crazy.
Years old, and 115 pounds, by the way. But his mom and dad came to me and with like literal tears welling up in their eyes, expressed gratitude for guiding him through that experience because it changed him as a person. He was more outgoing and confident in social situations. He had an interest in sports, which he didn't before, even though he played soccer. But they're like, he only played soccer because he knows you're supposed to for like college applications.
Oh, sure.
Which is like the grossest thing in the world. Disgusting. Like, yeah.
You want to be a marine biologist, but we don't see soccer on your resume. You know,
Was also highfalutin private high school. So they all have this checklist of like things they're doing throughout the year. And they're all at Dartmouth and doctors now. So, hey, good for them. But it was like it ignited an interest in sports, the fact that he went and kicked ass at powerlifting. And again, just the personal development stuff. And for me, that's what it is. Like, okay, cool. He, you know, had a better body weight to deadlift ratio than I could ever dream of. But also he developed as a human being, as a part of that 100%. Process, which is pretty fucking cool. Yes. Same kind of deal. Can you give me advice on jiu-jitsu?
On jiu-jitsu?
And typically, I don't know if you've heard it, but typically I'll say go up the belt ranks
and guide
a white belt, guide a blue belt, but frame it however you want.
Like for white belt, I think I'm trying to think of like how to not sound cliche and what someone else has already said, I guess.
There's something about having, let's say, 150 episodes of everybody saying the same fucking thing. That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
I mean, you know, you could say stick with it, work on defense, all this stuff for white belts. I'd say as a white belt and blue belt, I'd say really, I mean, yes, stick with it. Not because jiu-jitsu works after some time, and it does take time, but also a lot of these schools, they work on a curriculum and it's a circle, right? So like, you'll be working on guard passing for a while, and then you'll work on guard retention, and then you'll work on submissions, and then you'll work on a specific guard, and then you work, well, like as a black belt, you understand that like, if we're doing butterfly guard this week and butterfly guard is not my thing, I'm going to not necessarily go through the motions. I'm going to definitely try to take something good out of what's being taught, but also knowing like, this isn't a whole big part of my game, and I can take that away and make it positive, I guess. As a white belt, and you're doing something that you don't understand and don't, your body doesn't like it, or you just, it doesn't make sense to you. If you make a decision on jiu-jitsu because of the 2 months that you've done of stuff that maybe isn't your part of the game that is going to be your game, and you just quit, you don't even get to see the other part of the curriculum, right? So you don't get to see the maybe in your eyes, the cool stuff that's maybe not cool for someone else, right? So I say stick with it, not because just because jiu-jitsu takes time, but also give it time to make a revolution of like, maybe this month isn't your stuff.
Yeah. You see a greater breadth of what's available.
Or maybe you come into a really competitive gym, like, you know, like M Theory or Alliance, and they're ramping up for pans. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a kill or be killed atmosphere in the room, you know, to some extent. It's not like a wrestling room, but like those people are getting really ready for a big competition. Mm-hmm. And maybe you're coming into this as like a novice, just hobbyist, like you want to do it for you know, an activity to do. Maybe you're coming in, whatever, and you're seeing this really intense training happening, and you're only getting one piece of the game, right? You know, so like I'd say give it time, not just because, like I said, jiu-jitsu takes time, but see the whole process.
I like that. There's going to be cycles in the gym, both in curriculum but also in mode.
Yes, 100%. Like,
why are they all here right now?
And like, and Marcus, give yourself a chance to Marcus see might be just an absolute killer and not want to talk to anybody and only focus on himself because he's getting ready for pans or whatever. He's got to get his mindset. And he might not be the nicest person to talk to in the gym when he's in that mode,
right?
Or Ryan. Ryan's a perfect. He is a competitor through and through.
Yeah.
Like, he's a mean motherfucker when he wants to be, right? And but he's also a great human being, right? But if you catch someone like that in their training mode, they might not be. You might not have the greatest experience with them, right? But then you catch them in November when everybody's kind of chill. Might be the best conversation or the best role you've ever had.
Yeah. Just a whole different gym atmosphere, maybe. Yeah, that's actually a really, really excellent point. I don't know that that's come up too often of like, it depends on when you land at a gym, you know, let yourself experience a place for 6 months. Yep. Or also like
switching gyms, right? Even at another colored belt, right? You move to another area and you try a gym, you know, maybe not make the decision for that gym in the first 2-3 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of got to let the Novocaine set in a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, and really make your decision. I mean, that's a little bit different, I suppose, because you're spending money and it's like your time and blah, 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 right? But
well, if you're going to be spending money,
you could be in the best gym for you that's made for you, and you just hit the wrong time of the year or the week or whatever, right?
And I guess I'd rather spend the money here at this gym for the first 6 months. To me, that's sensible money spent to realize, it's maybe not my vibe.
Right.
Because if this is something I'm going to do for 10 or 15 years or forever.
The rest of your life.
Then what's a few $100 at one place to kind of realize, okay, that one's a little farther from home, but I think that's the vibe I want. You know,
yes,
there's nothing 100% wrong with that, I don't think.
100%.
I kind of like the idea of white belt being the trial class. Like, you're not done with your trial membership until you got that blue belt.
That's a perfect way of
saying it. Then get the fuck out of there. Then quit. Yeah.
You know, and you're so, like, at white belt, it goes with anything new, right? I mean, you're a white belt, you're brand new. You don't know anything from anything. So, like, there's no basis of comparison. So, like, you could go, like, someone could ask me, like, oh, what do you think of this gym? Or what do you think of this gym? And I could break it down, like, proximity, the instructors, the vibe, the, you know, whatever. Whereas a white belt, you're like, well, it was clean and everybody was nice, but, you know,
you have no idea.
You have no basis of comparison,
nothing,
right?
What about purple?
Purple belt?
I'm a purple belt, let's say, and I need advice.
Show up to warm-ups. What the fuck is this?
Do you think that's real? Or like,
It is. It 100%. I see it all the time.
The meme is bigger than the reality.
The meme is 100%. They're making a big deal of it. But it does. I don't know if there's this sense of entitlement.
I was going to say but it sounded negative. But like, you've sort of landed. You're there. You're in the cult.
But have you? You're like, you're not even halfway there yet. Like, a lot of people get to black to purple belt in like 4, 5, 6 years, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and if you have a 12, you're just halfway there.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, as a black belt, I haven't missed a warm up on purpose ever in my, like, I actually get a lot of comments of like, oh, you're actually going to do warm ups with us. And I'm like, yeah, why the fuck wouldn't I?
Mm-hmm.
This is what we do.
It's good leadership.
I'm not just telling you what to do. I'm going to show you what, you know, because people are watching, you know, and I'm a very lead by example person.
Culture comes top down most of the time too. So
right. So I definitely am going till the I will die on that shield that going to. If you ever catch me not doing a warm up just for the sake of not doing it, there's something wrong. Like I'm hurt or something's going on.
I'll make a meme out of it.
Yeah, so, there you go. Yeah.
Brown belt. What do you think?
Brown belt. Back up. White belt and blue belt. Actually, I just thought of this.
Anything.
White belt and blue belt become likable. Figure out how to be likable because
in life
it'll lead into what I'm gonna because I was thinking it'll lead into what I'm gonna say for brown belt and black belt, but as a white belt and blue belt, become likable. Mm-hmm. That's gonna be a huge part of your success, especially as jujitsu becomes I don't know popular is the word, but like as it becomes more of a relevant thing, there's gonna be more competition to get to the top, and the people who are more likable are going to get the extra credit given to them as far as like extra time, answer questions, mm-hmm. more roles, more XYZ, you say whatever you want.
Sure.
Right. The nods when the lead instructor comes to me and says, "Hey, what do you think about Matt? Do you think we should rank him up?" If I don't like you, I'm going to be like, "Oh, I mean, yeah, whatever. If you think so."
It's not going to be the same confidence.
Right. If I like you, I'm going to be like, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it right now.
Yeah.
You know, let's do it right now.
And in bigger picture, you mean, what is my contribution to the culture, to the room?
Yes.
To people under me in rank, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Just be likable for more. Obviously that's like a selfish way of reason for being likable, but also it builds the gym, right? You're going to build that culture and people are going to just have more fun being in the gym if there's more likable people, right?
I like that answer.
Yep. But then leading that into brown belt and black belt. Brown belt, I mean, you're like knocking on the door, right? I mean, as it goes, you know, if there's like a stereotypical chronological order, brown belt supposedly supposed to be the shortest belt of all of them, right? It was actually...
I've not heard that. Is that a thing? That's a whole part of the lore?
Yeah.
What's the justification behind that?
That I couldn't answer.
Sure.
But I mean, even if you look on like IBJJF's website and that shows like white belt is a year and a half to 2 years and blue belt is 2 to 3 and purple belt's 3 to 5 and brown belt, it's like, I think it says 9 months to a year or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
It's whatever. Yeah.
So it's purple.
Take that with a grain of salt, right?
It's purple belt heavy. Like that's where you're going.
Purple belt is typically, it kind of goes like this, right? It's like, you know, I guess goes really high at black belt because you're just a black belt, right? But yeah, I think brown belt, don't get hurt, you know, because you're right there, and no one wants to promote someone who's hurt, because it doesn't feel good getting your black belt when you haven't been training for X amount of time. Yeah.
You don't want to limp into black belt.
It's not only if I was hurt at brown belt, I would vocally say to my instructor, like, if he was going to hand me my black belt, if I had any say in it, I'd be like, can we just wait until I'm back on the mats and I feel like I deserve this? Because right now I feel like a pile of shit because I haven't been training in 3 weeks and, you know, my leg is messed up and blah, 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 whatever, right?
You want to fly into it.
Yes. Yeah. And you want to, it's like this. You want to get to that at that peak point, right? We're on a podcast, so you can't see my hands going up, but like you want to hit those accolades at a peak point. You don't want to go like this and then drop and then, oh, well, we're going to give you your black belt now when you're
consolation prize.
Yeah. You know, like we feel like you've been doing this long enough, so we're going to give it to you, but you know, you haven't been training in 3 weeks, you know, whatever, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, it just wouldn't feel the same.
Right.
Fair.
So, but also with brown belt, I'd say, and this leads into black belt too, is try to find a way to give back to the jiu-jitsu community. And whether or not that's just within your gym or like the whole surrounding community.
Like show up in ref tournaments.
Yeah, ref tournaments, you know, help coach classes, find those likable white belts and blue belts and take them under your wing. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, a lot of times it ends up being like, you know, I'm 140-pound black belt, so usually the people that I find are the white belts and the blue belts that are my size, and I take a liking to it because I've been there, you know. And then the vice versa, you know, how if you when you're a black belt, you're going to look at the bigger guys and be like, hey, man, I fucked this up when I was a white belt and you're doing it. So stop doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, you know, learn from my mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of the we all do better when we all do better philosophy.
Yes, like, 100%.
Let's eliminate errors by the generations.
But yeah, I think giving back to some extent. I mean, you don't have to like be a dedicated coach, but like, you know, help out, you know, share a little bit of what you like to do. Because I think, you know, it's funny because like when I started doing jiu-jitsu, there was only, you were lucky to be training at a gym with a black belt, right? Then we started getting black belts and you had one black belt, maybe two at the gym. The academy's always had a few because they're just, their roots are really deep, right? Mm-hmm. But you can see the jiu-jitsu that comes out of a gym that has a lot of black belts. And you could see it really at tournaments, because if you come from a gym that only has an instructor like me or only has an instructor like yourself, you're only going to see one type of jiu-jitsu. Whether or not they're showing all kinds of jiu-jitsu, they're only showing their jiu-jitsu of that type of jiu-jitsu, right? You come from a gym like now our gyms like Alliance or M Theory, mm-hmm. you got 30 plus, mm-hmm. you know, instructors. You might show lapel guard differently than I show it. Now these students have 30 different ways that they've been shown to do one move.
Right.
Now they see this huge picture of like, oh, I don't have to play this like this because Chris does it like this and Matt does it like that mm-hmm. and John does it like that. So really, as long as I can play it to my advantage, you know, you see the versatility in the students of a gym that has a lot of different instructors.
Yeah. Yeah. And even just from their own personal preferences.
Yes.
You know, their game is their game. You're probably going to teach what you know the best.
Yes.
You're going to understand other stuff, but it might not be. And all that other stuff might not be the sharpest or might not have the clearest way of individualizing it or whatever. That's interesting. Yeah, I got some personalized, if you will, advice from Ishmael on quarter guard recently. And then I got some personalized advice from Oleg on quarter guard, and they were dramatically different and both really good.
Yes.
And I don't even know where I land on it yet, and that's the fun part.
But that's
part,
what's
right?
awesome. You get to formulate an opinion on, because now you could go talk to Marcus, or you could go talk to Ryan, or you could go talk to Akilah or whoever, and be like, what are your thoughts on this? And not like, not that you're throwing shade on the other other people's opinion, because that's the funniest thing about jiu-jitsu is like you'll hear a lot of instructors be like, well, you're not doing it wrong, but there's this way to do it, you know? And any instructor that says, I'm showing you how you should do this is, I mean, obviously there's some things that are kind of like cut and dry, but like for the most part, there's a very large spectrum of ways to do pretty much everything in jiu-jitsu. So like if you have an instructor saying this is how you should do it, I'm going to go on limb and say maybe let's find a different instructor. Yeah,
that's the closest to wrong you could probably be. It in itself isn't wrong, right? They're probably right. It works for them.
It does work in the but in the grand scheme of things, it's like, but it's not, it's right, but it's not wrong either. Because somebody does it that way and it's worked for them, you know? So
I dig it.
Yeah.
Closing thoughts? No pressure.
get people into jiu-jitsu, man.
This is for.
It's really cool. I love this. I actually when I posted your reposted your story, a few people were like, I want to be on that. That's cool, you know?
Tell them to message me.
Yeah, I'll have them hit them up. And
here's the secret about, I guess technically this is content creation, which just has a negative connotation to the older half of millennials, probably. Yes. The secret to that is they all need the content. So come record.
And it helps. I think, you know, there's some of the guys that are talking to me where they're trying to build that. Like they're trying to go and build a brand for themselves you know.
And
I mean?
They so, should.
And
do
this
it.
This is like a mix what is it? A multi-level. No, not multi-level. Marketing. What is it?
Like a multimedia? I don't know, bro.
I'm not good with words.
Multi-level marketing. Definitely no,
that. That's like some pyramid shit.
Yeah, don't do Scientology
shit, man.
Or jujitsu, depending on
where you go, right. But no, get people into jujitsu. It's cool to see there's a lot. It seems like every week I see there's a new celebrity starting to do jujitsu.
Yeah, you know?
And it's really cool to
just
see.
Just means more exposure, right?
Yep, more exposure and, you know, more money into the gyms, which means better facilities and better competitions and potentially maybe money, cash prizes for like the big tournaments, you know, for these athletes. Like I recently went to Bruno Malfacini seminar and he was asked, what would you like to see change in jujitsu going forward? And he's a 10-time world champion. And he's like, you know what? And it sounded like he was puffing his chest for a while because I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. But he's like, you know, I won 10 world championships. And right then I was like, oh, that's pretty bold. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, and I never won any money for any of them. Then right. I saw where he was going,
right.
with it, you know.
Right.
And he's like, going forward, I'd really like to see guys and gals getting paid for their mm-hmm. hard work, you know. Mm-hmm. And the ultimate goal, if the ultimate goal is to get good at any one thing and be able to make money off of one thing, sure, you can open a gym and make money off of jiu-jitsu, right? And make it your job and make it your lifelong thing. But to be a professional athlete and only do jiu-jitsu and have that pay the bills would be like awesome, right?
Sounds amazing.
You know, to some people, right? Mm-hmm. To some people, it probably sounds like a nightmare, right?
Sure. 'Cause then, you know, they won't do it. Go away.
Right. You know, because like I like to golf.
Yeah.
But I think being a professional golfer sounds terrible. Like, you don't get to have any fun while you're doing it. It's like a job, you know, golfing's fun for me.
That's a fair thing. Once money's on the line, is it fun still?
Yeah. So then maybe, you know, for some people, jiu-jitsu as a job might not be fun.
Fair enough.
But yeah. Get people into jiu-jitsu, get women and kids into jiu-jitsu. I love working with kids and I love working with women, and out of context, that sounds terrible, mm-hmm. but I'm usually like, when I'm rolling with a female or I'm rolling with a child, I'm very careful about what's being said and what's being done because I want them to come back. I want them to have the best experience that they can because I want more women and I want more kids in jiu-jitsu because it's a very male-dominated sport or art, and it's very daunting to walk in that door and see 45 grown men and 3 women, you know. But as sad as it is to say, the women and the children, with the way the world is, that's the ones who need jiu-jitsu.
The way the world is, but also that's what jiu-jitsu needs.
Yes, 100%.
To the first point about the money, you figure what percentage of the population is women? North of 50, it's 55 or something like that, right? And then children are a huge percent of, depending on how you're breaking down demographics, like, gyms won't succeed if they can't retain women and have kids programs.
Yes.
The sport won't grow. People won't go pro.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can't alienate huge swaths of a population from a thing and expect it to be real, big time real. So both good points.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I this is awesome. I could talk about jiu-jitsu for like a part of me, because I can, you know, like the podcast is like coming to an end, and part of me is like, let's ramp it back up,
And if you recall some of the early episodes, like Ish and I recorded for like 5.5 hours.
Oh yeah,
and it was just bros sitting around.
Yeah,
you know, there was people gathering upstairs at Paulie's house, like it was going to be a party happening that night. The whole thing, but hour and a half is a little more consumable and enjoyable.
100%. I get in trouble with my wife all the time. Like, well, you said class gets over at 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why are you coming home at 9? Yeah. Well. I got undressed. Yeah. We rolled 2 extra rolls, so there's whatever. Someone had questions, and then we just sat and talked about jiu-jitsu. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm sorry. That's just what happens.
The real value of jiu-jitsu is the hour after class.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, and a lot of people, like, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have my own friends outside of jiu-jitsu, mm-hmm. but like for a lot of people, like if they're new to the area or they're not a very social person, like that's their social life. So like getting that 2-3-4 times a week is like what they need to feel
alive.
That, yeah, you know, like they need to feel that human interaction, you know. So
it's legit. 100%. All right, brother. Sounds good.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of the Pohata Podcast. And hey, if you're a regular listener, head on over to the Pohata Podcast on Instagram, where amongst the ridiculous memes, you'll find a link to the merch shop and be able to keep up with the disorganized going-ons of the show.